Hello, everyone. Welcome back once again to HOA. It's a True Story. I'm your host, Reagan Brown, and I'm pleased to have a returning guest with us today, Robert Browning, president of Browning Reserves Group. Bob was a guest during our first year, two times, I think, during the first year, and we're really happy that he's agreed to come back again today and discuss National Reserve Study Standards. So thank you for joining us today, Bob, and welcome back once again to HOA It's a True Story.
Thank you for having me.
So this is episode 164, so it's been a while since you've been here, but also joining us today, president of GB Group, Bill Mann.
Thank you, Reagan.
So, Bob, I know it has been a couple of years since you were on the podcast, and we have a lot of new listeners. So why don't you take a minute to tell a little bit about yourself and your company?
Well, thank you, Reagan. Yeah, I've been in this industry, I think, almost as long as Mr. Mann. I started in January of 1988, so 36 years. And I started as an assistant manager at a medium-sized community association management company here in Sacramento. Within 6 months, they lowered my pay, but gave me a title of manager, where I was a net manager for about another year and a half, and hired a reserve study firm to do reserve studies for all of my 11 associations I managed, and really loved that experience. And within a year after that, I got a job as a manager and burgeoning reserve specialist at a larger management company that had a construction company attached to it. And during that process, I helped manage, helped plan the Christmas party, office manager, did all sorts of things, but also developed the reserve study program that we're actually still using an iteration of today. And so by 1999, that company said, you know, Bob, this probably make more sense if you took this out on your own and started your own company. It's hard to hire yourself as a reserve analyst to other management companies when you work at a management company. So starting on day one, April 1st of 1999, means we just celebrated 25 years of doing reserve studies as Browning Reserve Group.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, the phone started ringing off the hook. It's like, finally, Bob, you're out on your own. We can hire you now. And so I grew from a small two-person, me and one other analyst, to where now we have a total of 12, including myself. And all we do is reserve studies in the Western U.S. We have an office in Las Vegas. We're primarily in Northern California, all of Nevada, but our largest clients are in Tucson, Arizona, and Houston, Texas.
Wow.
So it's going quite big. We have approximately 2,500 clients, including churches, schools, dock dominiums, campground dominiums.
schools. Anything you can That's think interesting. Of. Schools do reserve funding? And
yeah, private schools mainly. One of the private. Largest non-profit schools here in Sacramento. One of the Catholic high schools hires us, as well as a couple in the Bay Area. Secondary schools. So yeah, well, they do.
It makes sense. I just really hadn't thought of it because we spend so much time in the HOA world, you know?
Right. 90% of our work is through the HOA world, but some of our largest clients are park districts across the state and community service districts. We've done fire departments, utility districts, sewer districts, anybody who can benefit from long range planning. We actually have a couple of for-profit companies. We have one truck stop here in the Sacramento area that hires us to do reserve studies for them.
Well, let's go into this this whole idea about the national situation going on with reserves. Can you give us information about why Community Association Institute began to create national policies?
Yeah. CAI, the Community Associations Institute, was the first organization to credential reserve specialists, those that do reserve studies. And that was around 1999 to 2000. And along the way, CAI has created public policies about reserves and reserve studies like they do for all topics in the community association industry. And in 2016, we updated the CAI National Resource Study Standards that had been promulgated back in 2000. And then after the collapse of the Champlain Towers South in Surfside, Florida, back in 2021, CAI retooled everything about reserves, reserve studies, structural inspections, building safety, and preventative maintenance. Mm. And so CAI has been in the reserve study business for 25 years now, has about 300 plus credentialed reserve specialists. And a few years after CAI credentialed reserve specialists, APRA, the Association of Professional Reserve Analysts, was created, and they have approximately 60 credentialed members now. And we have about 30 that overlap. So 30 of the 300 CAI reserve specialists also have the PRA designation through APRA. Mm-hmm. So between the two organizations, there's probably 330 total reserve analysts in the United States. Excuse me.
That's quite a bit more than I thought. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, how significant is this group in bringing about policy?
Well, since the standards were an outgrowth of CAI, everything CAI does in terms of public policy is created by the Board of Trustees. Anything any of the states want to do that are members of CAI, the chapters of CAI among the states, they have to follow CAI public policy before, when they take a stance before their state legislature. Mm. So even though we had just updated the standards around 2016, after the tragedy in Florida, CAI kind of marshaled all the forces and took a holistic approach to dealing with that tragedy for a bunch of reasons. One is we wanted to be prepared if state legislatures across the country started mandating reserve studies, maybe in the wrong way, thinking they were solving problems that they weren't. So we wanted to be playing defense against any possible or potential bad legislation as a result of that tragedy. Hmm. So that meant we had to make sure the CAI public policies were retooled to meet that challenge. And that did happen quickly within 6 months after the collapse in June of 21, which was doubly difficult because of the pandemic. You know, we weren't having conferences right. every year. And second thing CAI did is wrote a public report called the Condominium, I think, Building Safety Report. And what it did is took all the public policies and information that we gleaned during our research period after the collapse, and that's published and available on CAI's website. The second thing that CAI did with all of its members is, they created the public policy, they wrote this report, and then we decided we needed to update our National Reserve Study Standards. And that was finished last year in July of 2023. And those National Reserve Study Standards are available on the CAI online website. And those standards really did three things. They defined what adequate reserves means, and we can talk about that in a few minutes. Talked about the definition of a component, and we revised it to be a little clearer and succinct. And the third thing was we created something called a long life component, which means a component just doesn't have to have a remaining life of 30 years to meet the definition of a component now. If the board and reserve analysts deem that this component should be in the study, because even though it's got a life greater than 30 years, it's important enough that we start saving for that component now, or at least disclose that we're not saving for it. Mm-hmm. And so the standards touched on those three areas. In addition, the standards encourage the use of structural inspections and building safety inspections on an ongoing measure, usually about every 10 years for vertical living, high rise, and so forth. And also encourages the use of preventative maintenance schedules at all buildings or communities. And while the building safety structural part is not part of the reserve study, and the preventative maintenance is not necessarily part of the reserve study, the reserve study can be used as a tool to fund those purposes. And that's what was really great about the change in the standards, was that we now can say building structural safety inspections can be a reserve component. If the work required by that inspection rises to the level of a reserve component, that work can be paid for out of the reserve study, as well as preventative maintenance. You know, when we talk about maintenance, it's like, well, you're really talking about custodial maintenance, preventative maintenance, predictive or proactive maintenance, corrective maintenance. So we landed on preventative maintenance, deferred maintenance, and corrective maintenance.
That's great news, because I know I always used to ask if we could just put it in a line item, and they would say, no, you can't, because then it's disclosed that there's not money going to it. So now you can put that in there, whether or not it's putting any money towards that line item. Am I understanding that correct?
Well, let's talk about a long life component. So typically it's going to be a component with a remaining life of greater than 30 years from the day you're doing the study. So there's three things you can do. You can include it with funding in the study, like a normal component.
Okay.
You can add it into the study when its life drops to 30 years or less.
Which is what we used to do. So
yep. Right.
Sure it happens. So.
Or you identify it as a component not funded in the study.
So that's what's new, right?
Required disclosure. Pardon?
That's what's new. Because before you couldn't put it in there if there wasn't funding.
Yeah, there was really no way to put it in. If you're not funding for it, how do you put it in?
Yeah. So now you can.
But now you can. And actually, it's always been a required disclosure. If there was a component that you know had to be replaced, but its life was greater than 30 years, so you did not have it in the study, you've always been required to disclose it. Now, how many folks do it? I'm not sure, but it's always been a requirement.
What if it's under 30 years? What if it's
then
a
it
system?
It rises to the level of component. It should be in the study.
Yeah, it should be in the study.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. So the inspection fees, like the engineering studies and stuff like that, that actually now can be a separate line item in the reserves, or are bulked together as inspections. And especially since they're not annual, it's hard to budget something like that in an annual budget.
The National Reserve Study Standard, everything for the listener, everything we're talking about is, when I say required or qualified or can be in the study, that's based on the CAI National Reserve Study Standard. Mm-hmm. Still want to check in the state where you might reside, if it's legal, state mm-hmm. by state law. But the standards allow for it and encourage it. And in California, it's kind of always been the case. We could do most of the stuff that's in the standards now. It's the rest of the country that hasn't been as forward thinking as California. Many states still don't have any laws regarding doing reserve studies, or mandating that reserves have to be collected and put in the bank for the benefit.
There's some states that don't even require reserves.
Oh yeah. Probably 30. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
They must not have a lot of HOAs.
And some of them just came on the books since Surfside, since the collapse of the condo tower in Surfside, Florida.
Now, Bob, you brought up one of my favorite topics is funding. You said there's a new standard for what they call adequate funding. Is that the term they're using now?
Yeah. Oftentimes people ask, how do we know when our funding is adequate? And so adequacy in the standards now is defined having a replacement reserve fund and stable and equitable funding plan that provides for the reliable and timely replacement of all associations' major repairs without the reliance on supplemental funding. So without the reliance on a bank loan or a special assessment. So if your funding plan has a reserve contribution stream, I mean, the amount that gets put into reserves each year, that say is stable or goes up with inflation or goes up by a reasonable amount each year, while not relying on a special assessment, while not going negative, obviously, you could say your reserve fund is adequate. And that's different than using percent funded as a measure of adequacy.
So how's the mortgage companies looking at that? Because don't they typically look at a percent funding number, or at least some of them do? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say probably they all do, unfortunately. Percent funded is one measure of adequacy, but it's not the sole measure of adequacy.
Sure.
And not the best measure. Usually the best measure of adequacy is what's the rate that the members are going to have to pay into reserves each year compared to what it is now, you know, the delta in that. And when the fund is at the most risk of running out of money, where is it at its low point? Is it, do you have $5 in the bank? Do you have $10,000 in the bank? And that's scaled derivative based on your association. You know, $1,000 buffer in your bank after you spend all your money on all your components in a given year might be a lot of money, but for a high rise, that same number might be $500,000.
Right.
So it's related to scale.
One of the things that used to be a big argument back in the day, really, and initially when reserve studies started, and it's particularly in the last couple of years, we've had so many different cost increases, code upgrades, additional inspections. You know, I used to be a big proponent for straight line funding. And then, you know, people like David Levy and Don Haney and everybody came, oh, no, cash flow is better. Cash flow is better. But I can tell you what, I never had any issue funding my reserve projects when I did straight line. And then I see this cash flow, which I understand, you know, keeps a lower dollar amount in the accounts, but it doesn't give you the bandwidth to make adjustments when there's different things. Are you seeing a swing back to straight line funding, or is everybody still using cash flow?
No, in California, everyone's still using cash flow. The challenge with straight line, and actually no one calls it that anymore except for old people like its official name is component method.
Component method. Okay, I'm going to have to update. Reagan and I keep learning new terms every time.
If you look at, in most studies, the component method is there's two methods, cash flow method and component method, which slash is straight line, which means you're fully funding each component each year. And
as it depreciates. So,
it's depreciated value. And it, and that's what kind of what's driving percent funded. You know, you come up with the fully funded balance and how much you have in the bank and divide the later into the former and you get your percent funded. Mm-hmm. And we do have some clients that do fund that. And we put a component method spreadsheet in all of our studies, and many of our competitors do too. So if the client wants to look at what the component method or straight line method would look like, we provide that. Mm-hmm. But there's not many studies out there. If anyone's listening to this and they have one where they're using the component method to forecast out for 30 years, I'd love to see it. Most, it's usually going to promulgate the numbers for the next year or 2 years, not every year, just the way the software usually works out. But we do have clients who use a goal of percent funded. They may say, oh, we never want to drop below 80% funded over the life of our community. And if they're already up there, it's easy. But if they're only at 20% funded now, the next question is, when do you want to get to 80%?
Yeah, next year or within 5 years? Study, because a dollar amount per unit could be insignificant at 20%, or it could be significant. So so it kind of depends. So how are you guys dealing with all the design and CM fees that have kind of become more standard now with reserve projects? Are you guys adding those in? Is it a separate line item? You know, how are you guys budgeting for that?
Yeah, well, let me talk about that, Bill, and kill two birds with one stone.
Okay.
So in the national standards, we streamlined the definition of a component.
Okay.
And so now there's a three-part test.
Oh.
So for a component to be in the study, it has to be the association's obligation to maintain the component. Association doesn't have to own it, but it does have to have the obligation to maintain the item or component. Secondly, the need and schedule for the project can be reasonably estimated.
Okay.
So that used to be the old, you know, you can articulate the useful life and the remaining life. Now we say the second requirement is the need and schedule for the project can be reasonably anticipated. Thirdly, for a component to be in the study, the total cost should be material to the association, reasonably estimated, and include all direct and related costs.
Okay.
So that's your CM fees, your demo, your permits.
Inspections.
And so notice the few things I did not say. It's not restricted to a physical component or a physical implement. You know, everyone thinks a component is something you shouldn't be able to go out and kick with your boot. And it's not. It's inspections. It's sometimes it's elevator load test, 5-year fire inspection, you know, the facade inspections in San Francisco. All of those, based on this definition, could be a components. Sometimes you're going to need professional subject matter expertise for the component. That can be paid for as a component or through the components. And preventative maintenance can be included. So if you're doing preventative maintenance, maybe you're waterproofing a podium deck. Is that a component or is that maintenance? Well, using that 3-part test, does association have the obligation? Is the need and schedule, can it be anticipated? And is the total cost of the project material to the association? And if the answer is yes, then it can be a component. So when we talk about adding CM, construction management, you know, permits, demo, any of that that goes into a component is part of the component. And if together, if they meet the 3-part test, regardless if they're maintenance, if they're structural safety, or if they're an inspection, they can be, if they're tied to the building, they can be, or the community, they can be subject to this definition and be a component.
This is a little bit of a off side of that question, but on the permits, because it changes so much from county and city, how are you guys putting in a fee for permits when it could just change so drastically?
It's tough. I mean, we see some of those costs change between our first draft and our second draft. We talk to folks like you, you know, most of us in the business, we do a lot of studies each year. So even when we're doing the yearly updates, you know, we're seeing lots of bids and proposals come by and come through. And normally when we're working on a large reconstruction, you know, we collaborate with the client to help come up with those fees. I mean, our whole job is predicting the future as a reserve analyst. I mean, it's
right. And there's things that pop up all the time that you're not counting on, like the EPA or I think, Bill, you were talking earlier about the lead and asbestos.
Yeah.
You know, are you guys accounting for that if you know the building is a pre-1978 building?
Definitely. Again, if it meets the 3-part test and we know the building was built before 1978, you know, we're going to talk to the client. You know, maybe it already been remediated before. But that's a conversation that the reserve analyst needs to have with the client to see if it's going to still need to be done.
And have you guys been getting have you been getting hit up with the sewer laterals at all? Have you seen coming around?
So I was going to bring up the contingency fund because one of the things that we're running into is not necessarily something of our projects, but at the end of the project, these guys are coming back saying, oh, by the way, to close out your permit for rebuilding your balcony decks, we need to have all your sewer laterals inspected. and repaired if we find issues with them. So we're seeing a lot of these weird, I don't want to call them code upgrades, but city add-ons, you know, for even items that the reserve study doesn't even have in them. So how are you guys dealing? I know contingency funds in the reserve study used to be kind of taboo with the CPA. Yeah. Is that still the case?
We have a small, in a lot of our studies, we have a small contingency line item, but it's usually barely material to the association. It won't handle something like that. Where you really deal with your contingency bill is in the 30-year funding plan.
Mm-hmm.
In that low year when your fund is at most risk, mm-hmm. if you think you're at risk for those types of cost increases or overruns, we'll make your buffer a little higher so you have more in the bank at the end of that low year. It's a concept called, I think Roy Helsing came up with this first, fund to the low year. So if your low year in your plan is in 10 years, and that's a year when maybe your roofing and your paving bump up with each other, to each other. And at the end of the year, your fund is going to be fairly low. Maybe you make it a little higher as your contingency.
Okay.
So it's not really a line item expense other than maybe in the era we're in now, we're bumping up all the costs for every component, you know, 5 or 10% more than we might have, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah, you have to.
We just do that across the board when we start any job now. Is the first thing we do is from last year's study, we bump everything up anywhere from 6 to 10% just across the board. No, it doesn't matter what it is. Then we look at each one individually and see where it should be. And so that's kind of the two ways we deal with the contingency on the expense side and then on the funding side.
How is the industry looking at things like solar and EV chargers and these other types of add-ons that we've seen over the last decade?
Well, that's one of the things where your reserve study can be an excellent tool. So we've had clients that have gone through solar upgrades where they've put solar arrays on their parking lots, some of the big Dell Webb projects, where they have the real estate to do that, and they get a return on investment for that.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
Yeah. We build options. You know, once we get their main study done, now we're like, okay, let's run you some options. And with your return on investment, what will the impact be on reserves? And then we'll work with management on the aspect that might affect operating. A lot of the EV chargers, those might be capital projects where you're not using reserves. The subsequent replacement could be used out of reserves. But if you've never had an EV charger at your community, you're going to probably want to talk to your legal counsel if you're going to use reserves to put that in. Because we've had legal opinions that have said adding a wheelchair lift to a parking garage is a capital expense, even though if they would have existed, you know, when the building was built, you know, if we had the ADA back then, you know, Title 24, the building probably would have been built with it. But no, the lawyers have said that's a capital project. And so for some of the newer things, it will be capital, but I would say updating the Lutron lighting controllers, going to LED lights, you know, to me, those would be reserve expenses. They would not be capital. The EV is kind of unique because it's just adding something that was never there.
What about life safety systems? We've had a lot of the cities that are making buildings change or add on to their existing life safety system, whether it's monitor or horns or detectors or different things in bedrooms. There's been all kinds of stuff that's come down. And then we've had San Francisco that's making dry stacks need to be wet stacks now and those kinds of things. Are those fall into capital expenditures?
I would tend to default those to reserve expenditures because they're serving the same purpose. You're just dealing with a regulatory environment that's evolving. Obviously, we have no cases on that. So you'd want to check with your legal counsel at your association. But taking care of an existing function with new tech, I would think is a good use of reserves.
Okay.
Those were good changes they made here. Do you think there's going to be any other legislative changes coming down in the future?
I'm sure there will be. There's none in California that we're aware of, knock on wood. there is going to be a session on the potential for changes at the CAI Law Seminar, or not Law Seminar, CAI National Conference in Las Vegas in May. Some friends that I know are giving a session on that. California, there's nothing on the horizon. CAI is having their advocacy week in the Capitol this week, and there's nothing in reserves currently in the pipeline. So I'm not seeing anything.
Do you think the mortgage companies are going to start driving more changes in reserve funding or reserve studies in general, since they seem to be so, they want like all these studies turned over. They want to know about percent funding. They're asking a lot more questions about building maintenance or deferred maintenance and things like that. So
they're very inquisitive, and we've seen clients have lawyers write letters back to them, maybe seek our advice first, you know, if we're the reserve analyst on record. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac require at least 10% of the budget go to reserves, which is a pretty low bar.
It is low. I think
even a poorly funded association is doing at least that. But that's probably where this is headed, more than on the legislative front, except where the states that have no laws about reserve studies. That's been increased since 2021.
It's kind of interesting to have a complete outside industry that could be driving your industry just based off of people being able to sell and get loans.
Once people start suing associations because their deal broke up where they couldn't get a loan, that's going to drive things really fast.
Yeah.
Yep. That sure will. And
part of our challenge is they all go to percent funded to look at for adequacy. Because they think it's this magic number that's really telling all, and it's not in a lot of cases, I should say.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, the name of the podcast is HOA. It's a true story. We love our stories on this show. Do you have a story to share?
Well, I probably have a couple of them, but I don't know how many I can tell on the air.
they're all good.
They're all good here. So.
Since we like to make fun of ourselves, we did have a case where for a very economically well-to-do community in Lake Tahoe, we provided the first draft of the study. And in the wisdom of one of my senior project managers, they put a picture on the cover of the study of the project of a broken guardrail on a road. And we got a call from the manager and goes, "Bob, these are multi-million dollar homes. You put a picture of a broken guardrail on our cover?" And it's kind of what happens in our industry. You know, you get a project manager out on the job. They're looking for that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And they think it's a win. Look what we found. And then, unfortunately, I don't know if the manager had read the study before they sent it out. I'm not sure. But we had to eat some on that.
Little crow there.
I had another one. This is probably funnier and embarrassing. We have two project managers who they just got married a couple of weeks ago, but they've been together for 18 years.
Wow.
And so when they work as a team, a lot of the times when they were out doing an inspection, one of them thought it might be kind of fun to take the picture of the other's rear end with the work camera fully closed. And so I didn't know about it. And so a couple of years later, I'm putting together a photographic inventory for a client who had a subpoena for a production of records for their lawsuit. We've luckily never been sued. And I'm looking at the pictures and I'm like, oh my gosh, there's pictures of their rear ends. What? And I'm like, well, should I leave them or should I take them out? But now the numbers aren't consecutive. Maybe we're trying to hide pictures.
Yeah, the defense is going to question that one.
Yeah, so I can't remember what I did. Nothing ever came of it. But fun having employees.
Well, Bob, if somebody wanted to reach out to you for some information on reserves, what is your website that they could reach to you?
Yeah, thank you. It's www.browningrgforreservegroup.com.
And if they can't find you there for some reason, they can always reach out to us at inquiry@GB Group Inc. and we will pass it along. Inc.com, I should say. And then we'll pass that along to you. Thanks again for joining us today. It's so great having you back. And I always love a good story, and you're always good for them. And, you know, next time we're back out in Nevada too, I hope we get a chance. You have so many diverse things that you do. Are you still doing drones? That was always really cool.
Not as much anymore. You really have to have people that are well qualified and licensed. So we backed off from that, but we do have the capability to add that on if needed.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Bob. It was great having you.
Great. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Good work.